Welcome back, episode 25 of the Get a Grip on Lending podcast. On today's show, we have David Nathaniel, the CEO of Standard. Standard's an interesting company. A lot of you US guys out there wouldn't know them, but they're Canadian. And when it mattered how many lamps and ballast you sold, I know for sure that Standard was number two behind Philips and definitely the biggest private manufacturer of lamps and ballasts in Canada. So he's an interesting guy. And like everyone else in this business, he's going through the transition from selling replacement light bulbs and ballasts to selling LED lighting solutions, fixtures, replacement LED bulbs, and so on and so forth. We had an interesting chat. It covered everything, man. So I can't really say what this podcast is about, except it's about the transition from being a light bulb reseller and ballast reseller to doing something different. How's that for you guys out there? Ha, ha, ha. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Keystone Technologies. Oh, yeah. Go to KeystoneTech.com. That's KeystoneTech.com, man. KeystoneTech.com. Scotty, throw up that future fit for me. You guys heard of future fit yet? Huh? No, not yet. Well, why retrofit when you can future fit? Keystone's innovative future fit LED kits are an ideal solution to convert legacy fixtures into energy efficient LED lighting systems. They're pre-packaged, man, with the appropriate Keystone drivers, the modules, the mounting accessories, everything you need to take a troffer, a 2x2, a circular, a rectangle, or a sconce from traditional CFL or linear fluorescent to LED, man. Check it out on YouTube. You can see the picture of their website right there. I love future fit, man. It's always a part of the struggle, man. Sometimes you go replacement bulb, sometimes you go future fit. If you want to go future fit, you go to KeystoneTech.com. That's KeystoneTech.com, man. KeystoneTech.com. There's a lot of fixtures out there that don't accept LED replacement bulbs and tubes that well. And that's where future fit comes in, like a wall sconce in particular. I'm looking at that wall sconce right there. That looks really swanky. That wall sconce looks good. The circular looks nice. Come on, man. Go to KeystoneTech.com. KeystoneTech.com, man. KeystoneTech.com. And remember, this podcast and every other one before it is the official podcast of the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Go to naild.org, that's nail.org, for joining, educational products, everything else. Without further ado, let's do it, man. David Nathaniel, CEO of Standard, on the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, baby. Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, David Nathaniel.
Thank you, Michael.
Say hi to Greg Garrick.
Hey, Greg, how you doing?
Good, David. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
David, how did you get into the lighting game? Where did it all start?
It all started back in around 83. My father had a small business working out of the house. And I was going to school. I thought I'd be in the get into the real estate game. So I bought a piece of land and I was going to develop it. But interest rates in the early 80s were up in the 20% range. So that didn't, you know, I decided it was a little too risky to actually build something. And so my dad had electrical tapes and batteries and a few other products, safety gloves. And one day I was going to Toronto to see a friend, and I asked him, hey, I'm going to be in Toronto. Do you want me to make a call on Canadian Tire? He was only selling in the Montreal area. I did that, and right place, right time, and I'm getting order for about 100,000 rolls of electrical tape. So, wow. So that's was kind of my lucky break. And then I expanded the tape line. I hired agents across the country and started selling to electrical wholesalers and was looking for something to expand into. And after looking at different products, lamps came to my attention, and that's how I started. So really started in late 83, roughly, on the lamp side.
I love that you started in sales. What do you think of that, Greg? I love that it started
with a
big order from a big company. Yeah. So how long were you working in the sales side of the business?
I was doing everything. So I was. I mean, we had a. We didn't have a warehouse. We had a public warehouse. Actually, like you, like when you started with your dad.
Yeah.
You guys worked out of the house. So same story. We had some stock in the garage, and then we use a public warehouse. So I get orders, go to the warehouse, pick them up, deliver them, come back, invoice, answer the phones. So, I mean, I was doing everything, and clearly, I mean, sales drives everything. So that was my main focus. Mm. And it just kept growing. We kept adding products and kept it going.
And do you still sell the tape?
We do. We still sell tape. It's not much of a focus. So
sure.
But we still actually, we're in the middle of a pricing project. And so I happened to look at tapes because I was reviewing the pricing. And we don't sell a lot, but whatever. We still sell some.
Sure. And you've been through some transitions in this business, from incandescent to CFL. And now CFL to LED. Are there any similarities that you see, or is just LED so much different than anything else that's come along?
Yeah, LED is completely different. It's a game changer.
How has it changed the game?
In so many ways. Number one, product life cycles are so short now. Somewhere between, I'd say, 4 to 15 months before you have to go to the next version of that product. So prior to LED, even CFL, I mean, CFL had a shorter product life cycle than, say, halogen, which was pretty much forever, or incandescent, or even HID. But even CFL, I mean, you had spirals that were maybe T3, and then at some point went to T2. But still, you had a good, 4 years run, 5 years run before you had to switch. So there's a lot of risk inherent with short product life cycles, from phasing in new products to phasing out old products. There's a ton of R&D required, design, certification, tooling. So there's a lot more risk in the LED business than there was in the traditional lamp sources.
How do you determine what to stock? Like, how many items to stock? Is there any formula you use, or is it all take a guess and hope it works?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it's really taking an educated guess. So we have at Standard what we call an S&OP process, supply and operations planning. And basically what that is a demand planning process. So we start with a demand review meeting, and we have sales. So from all the different regions, we have the sales managers in, we have quotations and project management in, we have the product marketers in, and they come to the meeting already prepared, and we review every product that is not on a system forecast, which is pretty much everything, almost everything LED is not on a system forecast.
So let me ask you this: how difficult has all the new certifications like DLC and all the Energy Star, has this made that short life cycle, along with having to qualify for all these different, what did Jason Bader call them, Greg? Accreditations. How has that changed things?
Well, I mean, it's increased the cost, basically.
Has it added value?
Sorry, has it added value? No, not really, because the Chinese have, taken the responsibility to a great extent to start certifying their products for North America. Well, probably for the whole world, but anyway, as far as I'm concerned, for North America. So it's, so the value of certification, or the restrictions that it used to have, are much less limited. So it's really a cost factor. And it's, I mean, I think they're trying to be fair, but the technology shifts so quickly. The components are changing. So, I think there's still some room in terms of managing what needs new certification versus what needs, what's accepted within the current certification. And it's evolving. But I
Do
don't really see a value add.
you think that's going to steady out in terms of the time frame? You said anywhere from 4 to 15 months or so that a new generation's coming out. Do you think that's going to expand because technology's
No.
improved so
I think
far?
it's going to stay
It's going to
within
keep
that
going.
range. There's so many factors influencing the product life cycle, from cost. We're still in a situation where the product cost is coming down, as it's a solid state product. So all the electronic components, the more you buy, the more you the lower the cost is. So there's a cost factor where if you don't upgrade, you might be left in an uncompetitive situation. You have legislation from the governments, from California or Energy Star. Well, not forget about Energy Star, even NRCan in Canada all have energy efficiency requirements. You have then the impact of Energy Star and DLC on the products as well. And when they change their rules or their specifications, you have to adapt. So, of course, like Moore's Law on the microchip. I don't know what the law is. I forget the guy's name for LED, but I mean, products today are in the marketplace at I think 140, 150 lumens per watt, commercial products. So, if you have I don't know 150 watt high bay and you don't update it, and somebody comes out with 125 watt high bay that's as bright as your 150 watt, then you could be at a competitive disadvantage. So all
Has the
those are the
efficiency,
factors.
but has the efficiency of LED kind of leveled off where we're as efficient as it's going to get? And now it's more about quality of light that, or at least that's what the industry has been saying to us on this show, that it's not about energy efficiency anymore. It's about the messaging now is about interacting with addressable IoT, smart lighting, and that we've really made all the gains in efficiency that we're going to be able to make, say maybe 3 or 4 or 5% more, but nothing substantial. Is that, have we got there yet?
I'm not sure, but I'm not sure from a technical standpoint. My gut feeling though is there's still room to go in terms of efficiency.
So you think there's going to be an 8 watt 4 foot T8 LED tube?
What is it now? 13 or
12 or
12 or
13?
10?
There's even tens now that are coming out, so it's going to keep going down, I think.
I mean it. It's likely. I don't know if 8 watts is the right number,
Right, yeah.
but will we see products that are 200 lumens per watt in a year from now or a year and a half from now? I have a feeling we will, but again,
You're not
I'm
technical.
not really, that savvy on the technical side to know if that's. But that my gut feeling is that would be the case though. So, listen, there's a ton of lighting upgrades happening and retrofitting, so the energy savings is still a big factor. The payback for the end customer is still a big deal.
Mark, do you know Mark Lean?
I don't,
No.
sorry.
So he's what is he? Greg, he's the industry relations manager for IES. I think that's his
Yeah,
title.
something like that. Government.
So he said that he believes, or studies he's read said that less than 15% of the market has been upgraded to LED. I don't think that's the case in Ontario. I think it's way higher than 15%. Do you have any numbers or any feel for that at all, David?
I don't have specifics. I would say,
And can you give me an anecdotal number that you
I mean,
feel?
I'd say the residential market is probably accurate. I wouldn't be surprised if it was, if not 15%, maybe 25%. So there's still whatever, 70% or 75% that can be converted residentially.
Right. Commercial, industrial.
Commercial, and even in, I mean, commercial, there's a ton of LED out there, so I don't know what the percentage is. I have to think 50%
I
has
would
been
say 50%
converted.
as well. What would you say, Greg, in Minnesota?
I'm more in the lines of around 30%. is what I think. Maybe
Just
one in
your gut.
three.
That's your gut telling you that?
Yeah, just gut. Yeah, it's hard to say
Hmm.
that that's accurate. I've heard 15% from the Department of Energy, I think, came out with 13% most recently. Where they got that number, I don't know.
There's hope for us yet, eh?
I guess
We need
that
it.
kind
We
of
need
leads
it.
to, yeah, I guess one of the questions I had that stuck out to me, David, is just straight out ask, are you excited for the future?
I'm totally excited. Totally excited. It's been, I'm not saying it's been easy, and it's been more of a mental struggle than actually a business struggle, because we've had to try. I mean, we're a lamp ballast company.
Sure.
5 years ago, it made up 100% of our sales. Today, it makes up 35% of our sales. So 65% of that business has gone away, and it's been replaced by LED lamps and LED fixtures. So, and we've grown every year in these 5 years, not substantially, but we've grown. So I'm pleased with our
Have
progress.
you grown in terms of lamps shipped
No,
or
dollars.
dollars? So that you may be shipping less lamps, but because they're LEDs, you're shipping at a higher cost, or what is it? Is it less SKUs, higher
Yes.
value?
I would say it's a good question. I'd say it's probably less SKUs. It's probably less SKUs if I'm just looking at the overall number.
Sure.
Yeah, it's probably less SKUs. I haven't actually I probably should take a look and see. On the LED
What's your high?
side, yeah.
I was going to say, what's your highest moving SKU? If you picked one, is it a specific item that you move the most of?
In units or
It's a
dollars?
PL13, I bet.
Units. I want units first.
In units? Man, it's changed so much. I'm just trying to think about it.
Yeah, it's like a 6 month outlook probably on that.
I'm gonna guess it's I probably Omni A19 LED lamps. There's probably one of those SKUs that in units, right? Yeah. That would probably be one of those SKUs, probably a 60 watt equivalent.
You know what's
Sure.
interesting? I'm just going to change gears here a little bit because there's a so I about 20 years ago or so, I would say that a lot of people in the industry considered, especially in Ontario, would have considered Standard like an upstart or a new player in the game. And then I don't know if you remember, but we bumped into each other at the ElectroFed, one of the ElectroFed events in
Yeah,
Toronto, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago.
yes.
And Greg, I looked at David and I thought, you know what? I think David's the most powerful man in the lighting business in Canada. And I think I told you that. I think I told you that. And now I have no idea who that would be. You know what I mean? Now 4 years, now with the LED thing going on, I have no
Right.
idea. And so you, like Standard, kind of went from being, kind of trying to gulp away at Philips and GE in Sylvania and Ontario. And then you went to be, pretty much every distributor would have an account with Standard products and moving a lot of your stuff to where, maybe you're number two or three. I don't know. At some point, I remember one of your reps was saying that you guys were number three in Canada or number two in Canada before
Yeah.
the whole LED thing started.
Yeah, number two.
Number two.
We're still number two.
Okay. And then, so now there's other people that are doing what you were doing 20 years ago. There are a lot of upstart businesses,
Absolutely.
bringing in product from China, new name brands in the business, and so on. How has that affected Standard products going from the mover and the shaker to the incumbent? How has that changed your strategy?
Yeah, so
Do you understand
we,
what I'm saying
oh,
here?
totally, yeah. Number one, we've made a concerted effort in the last 5 years to try and do more of our business with strategic partners. So today we've accomplished that, and but it's not a finished job. It's something we're still working hard at. And so I would say we're probably more impacted by these upstarts, where we're not all that strategic. And the distributors that we are strategic with, We have strong working relationships that are much more than just about price. They're about developing business together, creating demand. Working together in a more efficient way from a supply chain standpoint and transactional costs. So that is the direction we're going, and I see that we're going to be doing, we're going to continue to grow, and we're going to be doing more of our business with less customers.
Why not just sell direct?
Because we're happy working through distributors. We think they play an important role.
So do we. So do we. But there's a lot of that going on out there where you have the traditional, I guess, don't take it the wrong way, but so the tier two, so the non-GE Phillips Sylvania people, going with a maybe setting up their own distribution business or selling through a website on their own or selling on Amazon. And sometimes I look on Amazon, Greg, and I know that that bulb's not coming from a distributor. You can tell by the volume or how many they have. You know that maybe the manufacturer or the brand is selling directly over Amazon. But there's just too much pressure in this business right now that the traditional channels are kind of falling apart. Do you see that as well?
The traditional channels are under a lot of pressure, and there's no question that they are losing some business, commodity business primarily. You have, listen, you have, I get, you probably get emails every day from Chinese companies that have warehouses in primarily in the US, and they've got their specials on, wall packs and panels and, you name it. And pricing is extremely aggressive. You have, and then you have, you've got guys importing products from China that are, you have ESCOs that are importing products from China. So it's a very, very busy, very dynamic marketplace. I still feel though that while distributors will give up that lower margin commodity business, they're going to make it up with higher value solution type, focus. And I think that's the key. That's the key for distributors. And what I think distributors need is that they really need strong partners. So that's what we're working hard is to be a really strong partner so that together as a team, we can go and grow our business in the marketplace. So I'm not talking as an industry.
Sure.
I'm talking about our company.
Specifically Standard.
And there are great distributors out there who are have the right mindset. So
Now you said you guys are number two in Canada. Who's number one?
Phillips. I'm talking now
Phillips, okay.
specifically lamps and
Yep.
ballasts. So I mean
So did
I don't have the number, but
Sure.
that's my guesstimate.
Okay. So do you feel that brand matters as much as it used to?
No, it doesn't. It's still important. I'd say Standard is a very well-recognized brand in Canada, so that's, that helps us. But no, I think it's less and less important, especially in Canada. I think in the US, it's still a bigger deal, but I think that's also been watered down and diluted over time. You see so many, and all these guys out there. So I imagine it's not as important.
Yeah, I feel that way too. And I think the thing that matters and from a distributor side is the company that you're working with. Not necessarily the brand name as much anymore, but we're competing against a lot of the imports and things like that too, where we have to go in and say, this company actually has a physical presence in the US or has some backing that you're going to get that service if you need it. If you're dealing direct with China, who knows if you'll get the service. And there are different hours and all sorts of variables that
Sure.
come in with it.
You know, it's interesting. You don't have the same level of competition, Greg, as we do in Toronto. So a lot of people, I've
No.
brought this up on the show. I think the the actual legitimate number of mainland Chinese immigrants to Toronto is 500,000. Okay, those are legal. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then there's probably, estimates vary. There's probably 200,000 illegal, maybe 300,000 illegal China, not illegal, but not here as permanent residents. Okay. Say, right? Sure. I'm not going to say they're illegal. They're here on work visas or whatever. Yeah. And there's 15 shops we could walk there in about 10 minutes from here. 15 directly importing lighting companies.
Yeah.
Within a walking distance. So I think Toronto is a unique market in comparison to the rest of North America, simply because there's so many mainland Chinese people. They're good business people. Mm-hmm. They're smart. They're aggressive, and they have access to very, very low costs. And they have relationships in on the mainland, and it makes Toronto a unique place to do lighting business. I think it might be unique to the entire continent.
Yes.
And maybe Vancouver's in the same situation.
It's probably more accentuated here, but it's a scenario that plays out everywhere, everywhere in North America and in Canada and the U.S. Where, I mean, I'm exposed to competitors. I don't even know who they are.
Yeah, for sure.
A sales manager will show me somebody's price list, and it's a complete price list. And like, I've never heard of these people.
For sure.
How is it possible that, you know, they can carry stock and actually do business? It's quite impressive. That being said, I received an email last week from one of these fellows in the Montreal area that was closing down, and he was trying to liquidate his inventory. So
that's the other problem. See. I mean, there's a ton of stock out there being liquidated right now.
Oh yeah.
Tons and tons.
Well, it's the nature of short product life cycle.
Yeah. I get some lists sometimes, and I see the stock some people are carrying on products of 250,000 of some, of some, you know, 13 watt LED bulb from 2 years ago.
That's a good business, a surplus business. If you know how to take that product and get it to market, you could probably make a fortune, because every lighting manufacturer, whether it's luminaires or lamps, is sitting with excess stock because of
saying every single one.
Well, it's older generation, so you have, you know, whatever. If I'm on Gen 5, sure. I certainly will have some Gen 4 in stock.
Sure.
I might even have some Gen 3 in stock.
Sure.
I hopefully have thrown away Gen 2. Or at least the people in my company hope that I accept it to let them throw it out.
I think it's a huge, like, they're sitting on like huge capitals, right? That's just decreasing in value so quickly. And it's very painful. I think there's going to be, what do you see in, we were talking with Randy in Frankfurt a couple weeks ago, Randy Reed.
Yeah.
And he said there's going to be tons of consolidation in this business down the road. Do you see that as well?
I mean, the lighting fixture business is very fragmented, very fragmented. So there's tons of consolidation opportunities. Do I think it's going to get consolidated to a few big groups? Absolutely not. I think it's going to stay a fragmented business. But I think you could have...
So when you say that, do you mean that it'll remain regional as it is now? That there's regional players that are big in certain markets? And
yes, regional, national. Well, I don't know about regional. Just to make it easy, forget about regional.
Okay.
But now, so a Canadian or an American company that's in the lighting fixture business selling, let's just assume nationally within Canada or within the US, I think that's going to stay fragmented.
Hmm.
I think that's going to stay fragmented. Well, look, Siemens decided a long time ago that the lighting business wasn't going to be profitable. So they basically spun off Osram. Osram just recently spun off Led Vance, okay, and they want to stay. Osram wants to stay in a higher tech business, and Led Vance is basically what they sold is a declining business. So now the buyers have to turn it around and make it worth something. Philips was all in. Royal Philips out of the Netherlands was all in lighting. It's one of our pillars. After spending billions of dollars in acquisitions, whenever I don't know the exact time frame. I'm going to get 6, 7 years. After that, it was, you know what? This is not a good business for us. And they spun it off. And now Phillips Lighting, which is now going to be called Signify, is a separate business. It's I think Royal Phillips is maybe they have 20% left ownership. I mean, but they want to be out 100%, is my understanding. And now Phillips and now GE has just sold their European business, and they're working hard to sell their North American business. So those were all multinational corporations in the lighting field, and they're getting out of lighting because it doesn't work anymore. With Philips, with all their investments, they could barely get 10% market share globally on the lighting fixture side. When, on the lamp side, they had 80-85% share, the three of them. It was they were printing money. But the fixture business is a totally different game. So I see it staying fragmented.
So going back to one of my initial questions, what specifically excites you about what's going to be in the future in
That's
lighting?
a great question to ask again right now.
Right now.
After what you just said.
I mean, listen, while I am running Standard, I also own two other lighting businesses, lighting manufacturing business, Stanpro Lighting Systems and
Sure.
Aimlight Corporation. So those two businesses, because they don't have the negative effect of losing tons of lamp and ballast sales, are growing at a very fast pace. And so I see lots of opportunity for them because they have manufacturing or assembly facilities. They have a lot of capabilities, and they are will more and more be able to differentiate themselves from Chinese competition. Also, they've been able to vertically integrate better. So where as a fixture manufacturer, they used to buy lamps from GE, Philips, and Osram, and from Standard, and Venture and whatnot. Today, they're actually manufacturing their own boards. So they've invested in, or we've invested in SMT machinery. We actually did that about a year and a half ago. We're adding a second line now, so we're populating the boards ourselves, taking out costs, reducing inventory risks because it's now more just in time. You're
Sure.
cooking, basically baking cookies,
Sure.
then carrying finished boards. On the Standard side, I see lots of opportunity. We're growing very rapidly. Our fixture business is up over 40% in the first quarter this year. So we're getting a lot of traction, and I have a clear path of where we want to go. And I think it's going to be very, very positive. And then as David Nathaniel, that's the owner of these three businesses, I see opportunities both organic and via acquisition to continue to grow.
So what is it? So then, I remember, Greg, what was the light fair where Phillips basically bought like 15 companies 3 months before? They bought like Crescent Stone Co. and I can't remember, but you remember that? Like 4 or 5 years ago, you walked into the
They
light
bought
fair and
Color Kinetics. They bought,
everything
yeah,
was
all
Phillips all
they
of a
bought a
sudden.
ton of different businesses.
So what did they do wrong? What is it that I mean, obviously you don't have any inside information, but what is it that stand, how about this one? What is it that Standard's doing differently and succeeding where, 'cause there isn't a, in terms of size in Phillips Canada, why is it that they want to get out of this thing and you're excited and moving forward and looking to make acquisitions, and what is it that you're doing differently?
Well,
Without giving us any trade secrets, of course. You can give those too if you
first of
want.
all, I say Royal Phillips divested of Phillips Lighting.
Right.
Phillips Lighting, which is going to become, I guess, Signify Lighting, is I would say is investing in the
Okay.
lighting business. So I don't think they're retreating.
Okay.
They're probably, trying to right size themselves and take out inefficiencies and so on and so forth. But I would certainly say that they're vested in growing their lighting business. I mean, they're in the same boat as we are. They have still a ton of lamp business that for Philips, according to their reports, generates over 20% EBITDA for them, and they have to replace that with other products, fixtures and lamps primarily,
sure.
and I guess smart lighting stuff. So, listen, we're a private company. We're entrepreneurial. We're flexible, and we're evolving. I think we're progressive. I think we run a professional business. We're a Canadian best managed company through the Deloitte CIBC program, and I think it means a lot. It means that you're structured properly and you're successful. So I guess it just comes down to being entrepreneurial and being a good strategist, having a high level view of where things are going, and then being able to also have a
be nimble.
Be nimble and understand the market and understand the trends and where are the opportunities, where can you maximize margin, where do you want to maybe play but not rely on because
sure.
it's getting commoditized to an extent that isn't very interesting.
Yeah. No, I think that those are some of the key words you said, and I see that with even on the distribution side. In order to be successful in the future of lighting, you need to be flexible and you need to be innovative. And I think you guys as a manufacturer are in the right area, because there are the people who have been in business maybe even longer, but they've been set in their ways. And a lot of them are, the big three, for example, mm-hmm. are changing and they're trying to evolve, but they're a little late to the game on that. Companies like you guys have been always doing that. And then there's new companies that don't have any history. So I think you guys are in the right spot, just to give you some kudos on that.
Thanks. Thanks, Greg.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I also think, because you were touching on before the importance of service. So mm-hmm. I think that's a big factor. It's, yes, product innovation is important. Service is extremely important. For everything from how easy it is it to use the company's or your supplier's website, how easy is that information available in a sort of intuitive way from a B2B portal where you can check stock, where you can check your pricing, where you can check any project contracts that are outstanding, where you can check deliveries, do the accounting side of it as well. Then there's all kinds of, there's vendor managed inventory where there's a ton of risks. So I think one of the values that a manufacturer can provide to distributors is taking risk away on the inventory, and managing that distributor's inventory so that they, so for example, if you're going, like if we're about to launch a next generation LED PAR range. So we know already that we're doing that. We know when we're doing it. So if we're proactive in going to a distributor and say, look, in a month from now, we're launching a whole new range and the pricing's going to be 10% less or whatever it happens to be. Look, check your stock and maybe you want to try and move it out, or worst comes to worst, when we're ready to launch, we'll take back the old and you'll put in the new in stock. So I don't think I think it's short-sighted to think that, hey, I sold the stuff to this distributor, it's his problem. I really think at the end of the day, it's really about partnering. It's really about being a team, because I think distributors are at a lot of risk of being disrupted by guys that can get the product to the end user at a lower cost.
Sure.
So if you can eliminate redundancies, so you're spending money, the manufacturer's paying money, sure. both on the same thing. What's the point?
Yeah.
So if you can take these inefficiencies out, if you can have really good information, just information on product and mm-hmm. what's coming up, what are the features, how do you even keep track with everything that's going on out there? I mean, we have trouble keeping track with what we do ourselves, I can only imagine what it's like for a distributor. So I think it, you know, I think it needs to be considered in a more holistic way, the relationship or the value that a manufacturer and distributor can generate together.
Greg, let me ask you something, and because I can see what what David's talking about. How many? So we've talked on the show about the nature of the lighting business going from sort of a pseudo subscription style of business, where you know the bills from Standard Products would come across my desk 6 or 7 years ago, and it was basically the same amount almost every month, right? And then I'd have key suppliers and. Excuse me, they would get the same about the same amount of business from me every single month. Now with the project business, we'll get a supplier who gets a huge jump 1 month and the next month almost nothing. And then another supplier, they'll go 3 months and then we'll have another project. How is that? That's what Standard and Atlas and Premier are struggling with is the steadiness of that revenue. Everything's a project. Everything's a project. Everything's you know, an application for rebate now. How have you guys seen that as a struggle for you, or do you understand what I'm saying?
It's not a struggle in terms of revenue generation. It's actually an opportunity. It is a struggle in terms of forecasting. Very, very difficult to forecast. And I was talking about the process, and so we have this demand review. I mean, we have to sit down and, you know, you've got all, we have a pipeline out there of all kinds of projects. And now it's a question of, okay, well, what's the probability of this coming through? And what about that one? And then there's stuff you don't even know about that the phone's going to ring or an email's going to come through, and all of a sudden it's an opportunity. So it's not, listen, our fill rate last year was 92%, which is okay. It's not great. We should be, you know, 96% plus. But it's very difficult and it's very risky because with LED, as we said, short product life cycles, you buy too much and you sit on it, it's in 6 months or 12 months, it's going to be worth nothing. So, you know, you're trying to find that balance. And I think that's where, and this is what I don't understand is how all these sort of tier three, no name, new entry lighting LED guys. I know the entry's easy because everything's approved, certified. You just go to China and place orders. But I don't understand how they can have enough stock, and maybe they don't, and how they can be financially strong enough to be a viable business, a viable partner for a
They
distributor.
don't care.
No, I'm saying I'm
The
not saying
third
they
tier,
don't care. I'm just saying
guys,
if you want to build a business,
they're
they
in for a
just want to
quick
sell
buck.
off. They
Quick
bring a
buck.
container, sell it off, and
It's just a
they
quick
don't
buck.
care
They're not
whether
building.
the next delivery is in 3 months from now.
Nah, they'll change their names.
I
The thing
don't.
with.
Yeah, I don't see them building a business at all. That's exactly it. They're just taking advantage of an opportunity and trying to sell as much as they can, and then they'll move on.
So should we raise
That's
the
what I see.
dark? Should we raise the dark curtain? The promises, promises.
Might as well
So
start it off.
we have a an ongoing sort of theme. I call it the promises, promises, right? So you know you have fixture manufacturers with 10-year life, and we were talking to you know 10-year warranties, and then you read page 14, and they back out the driver, they back out the LED board, they back out all the key components that are actually going to fail on that fixture, and the warranty set at 6 hours a day, 5 days a week, or whatever. They have some calculation in there on page 16. But there's a lot of pressure on the legitimate manufacturers to match these 10-year warranties because what you're seeing on, you know, I'm sorry, but some guy who's bringing in a container of lights from China, he puts 10-year warranty on a box. He doesn't intend to honor that.
Of course not. He might not, he will likely not be around in 10 years. I'd
For
say
sure.
85% probability.
Now, how do we contend with this? This is a serious issue.
Well, I think, listen, I come back to the distributor and the credible manufacturers having to partner together. Because you as a distributor are fate, you just said there's 15 shops, right? They're all competing with you,
For sure.
right? So what we see a lot, we see a lot of proliferation of distributors supporting tier two, forget about tier two, tier three type suppliers.
For sure.
So when they should be competing with these guys, they should not be encouraging them and making them more credible. And this is a problem in our industry.
I'll tell you right now.
Manufacturers are playing the field and distributors are playing the field. And if we're going to be successful, that's my take. I'm not saying I'm right. But my take is if we're going to be successful, bona fide, credible, progressive distributors and bona fide, credible, progressive manufacturers need to team up. And many of them are already doing it, but it needs to grow even more. And I think that is the key to success down the road is strong partnerships.
Here's what I'll say. We have a dual strategy
Okay.
here. Okay. So I have no choice but to compete with these. There's no choice, and it's a price game. So we have contractors that walk in here. They want a $6 or $8 LED pot light. That's what they want.
Right.
They're putting it in someone's basement, whatever. The person that's doing the renovation doesn't even know what the brand of the light that's in there is. Is it dimmable? Is it 3,000 Kelvin? Good to go, right? So I think there is a huge demand out there from various in the channel. So the electrical contractor that walks in off the street, he doesn't care about this or that or the next thing. He's charging $50 a pot light installed, and he wants the lowest, the cheapest pot light. There's nothing else you can do. You can sit and talk to him for 10 minutes about paying $40 for the pot light. He's not going to do it. So there's a dual strategy. But then you go to your project side where you actually engaging with the end user customer. And let's say it's a tough environment, like a condominium, for example, is interesting because a lot of condominiums act like residential properties, but they're not. They're actually more like they're worse than a commercial property because they're running 24/7 in their hallways. Right? So we have tons and tons of contractors that come in with some LED fixture that the builder put in 3 years ago in a condo. They have 700 of these. Okay? And the drivers are failing on them. And where are you going to get that driver? You
Can't find it.
can't get that driver. You have to order 1,000 from China to get the driver. And they want 10 because they have 10 out or whatever. So I think there is a significant demand, and I would say more than 50% of the demand in this market is price-based demand. What is the lowest price you can give me? Do you face the same thing in Minnesota there, Greg?
Yeah, no, it's getting to that point. Maybe not as much as you, but there definitely is that aspect that you got to consider every time. And that's what's hard to compete against. I don't know the right way to, you
That's where
just
the
got to try to
distributor
talk to your
is.
customer.
That's where the yeah, but even like I'll tell you, we have probably 10 contractors a day that walk in here and they'll buy 500, not 500, but say 40 or 50 pot lights. Can lights, Greg. Call them can lights in the States.
Thanks. Thank you.
No problem. Not marijuana grow lights, can lights.
Recess
They'll come.
cans, sure.
They don't want to hear anything about paying more. They'll just look at Rahul on the desk there or Frank and they'll say, "Sorry, Frank, I'm going to go to MW LED up here because he's got them for $9. Do you have them for $8 or not?" That's the bottom line for that business. And that's a huge portion of the business, David.
Listen, it's a huge portion of the business, but I think as a business owner, you have to decide where you want to play and where you don't want to play. So, to me, that business should be a opportunistic side of your business where, hey, I can make some money selling it. I got whatever. I have a manufacturer of, where I can buy it. It's cheap and it's not going to come back to me because it needs to last a year and so that to me that shouldn't be your business. But if it's 15 or 20% of your business and you can make money doing it,
Sure.
why not? But it's the 80% of your business that you need to be providing value on and upselling and making margin and protecting yourself in the marketplace. I mean, I mean, Atlas and Greg, you guys have value propositions out there. I mean, your customers have as many choices as, they have tons of choices. But if they're dealing with you, they're dealing you for the w with you for a reason. So It's got to be because of the value you're providing them.
Let me ask Greg a question here. Greg, do you multi-tier price your proposal sometimes? Like, do you give someone like, okay, so you can go with this manufacturer who will actually back their warranty, the promises, correct, promises, right, or you can go with this one, which you're on your own. Do you do that?
Yeah, there's a, for sure. There's a lot of times too where you're against competition and you try to do apples to apples, and it seldomly is because of that situation. And so you have to look at it. And I do that more and more now lately with proposals. I get, you know, copies of, not without the pricing, but with the product that's on there. And then you got to say, get it, okay, with the pricing
too.
This,
you get it with the pricing too sometimes.
If I
come
get
on.
Lucky. If I get lucky. But okay. I got to show them and I say, okay, here's what I'm presenting and here's why I'm presenting this. But if you want that, we can price that too. So you have to do that to some degree just to stay.
So distributors are in that position, your customer. But that's why you came out with your Elume line, is it not?
Yeah. So that's opportunistic. Yeah. There's a lower market, as you're referring to. We have the reach, we have the distribution, and the market needs a lower end product. And I mean, a good example, it's long past, but you know, MR16s. I mean, we had iBrand from Iwasaki, we had a standard brand, and we had an Elume brand, and we had a little more. But
hang on 1 second.
Yes.
Do you know how many of those Lucci MR16s Lucci I bought from you guys? Because they were right in the middle.
Yeah.
But like they were good enough that the customers didn't complain.
Yeah.
But they were also didn't last. Those Iwasakis would last forever, David. I could never get another order out of the guy.
Honestly, I installed them in my house in 2002, man. And I'd say up until about, they lasted at least 10 years.
I'll tell you a story. So my wife is my high school sweetheart.
Okay.
Okay. So when her father was renovating their bathroom in the basement in 1998, he put in Iwasaki MR16s in the bathroom. And guess what? Same bulbs today.
But so anyway, my point on MR16s was, so we had only Iwasaki at one point.
Okay.
And at the height, we did about 750,000 lamps a year.
Okay.
But then we felt the pressure. So we launched Standard brand. Okay. And we had some Lucci. And then after that, we launched Elume brand. But altogether, when it was all told, at our highest point, we were selling 1.5 million MR16 lamps a year. So units. So just to say, there is, I mean, you can have a good, better, best.
Sure.
Strategy and so while there will be some cannibalization,
sure,
at the end of the day you're still getting more business than if you hadn't done it.
But Standard's positioning itself as best moving forward with the fixture line.
We have on fixtures, we mostly have one brand.
Okay.
And it is we do a lot of work to ensure the quality. In some cases, we're tooling, we're doing our own certifications, we're doing our own design. In other cases, we have a very, very strict process of, you know, specifying what we want and doing quality inspections at the factory, quality audits, and we have a whole thorough quality assurance process. So from, if they want to change anything on the bill of material, they have to get our approval.
Mm-hmm.
I can guarantee you your lighting stores that are in your area have no clue what they're getting. It can change every time they buy it.
Yeah. They have no control over the color temperature or things, like, really,
so
things
it's,
like that.
It's,
yeah. Well, let me ask you this. And Greg, maybe we should wrap this one up. It's a good time, 40 minutes or so.
Sure.
So how many people do you have in your office working on warranties? Like specifically on warranty returns.
Warranty issues?
Yeah, warranty issues, yeah.
At Standard, we have a lab with, I'd say there's two people really focused on it. I wouldn't say that's their only job. Mm-hmm. They're also doing inspection and so on and so forth. But we have, I'd say we have somebody that's more customer facing.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably spends, I don't know, half his time on that. And then we have a lab person or various lab people that will go and inspect product depending on what it is. If it's a if it's a driver issue, it's a different person. If it's a chip issue, it's a different person.
Do you foresee having more warranty issues down the road? Like as you know, we've had a lot of 5-year warranty lamps out there right now. Do you see yourself having more issues down the road, and maybe it's going to be a bit of more of a headache for you guys?
No, I don't think so. No? Okay. I think we're also learning. You know, we're learning as we go along. You keep running into, I mean, we never used to measure the sound of the lamp or the fixture until we had a problem where there was a buzzing sound.
Hmm.
So now we test
the decibel. What about level. Flicker? What about LED flicker? Have you guys got into any of that IEEE 1789 standard stuff, or you know what I'm talking about?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. We're
we did a podcast with Dr. Arnold Wilkins, who's a professor emeritus over in England, and he was the guy that proved that flicker in T12s was causational on seasonal affected disorder, epileptic seizures, migraine headache. He proved it.
Right.
Like he did a double blind study, like the whole, then it was peer reviewed and so forth.
Right.
And under no uncertain terms did he say, no, it causes it. And a lot of the existing LED lamps out there are worse than the T12s. So what he was saying was that they literally go from 0 to 100 rather than from, you know, 100 to 70%. They would go, so a T12 wouldn't flick off. It would dim from 100 to 70% because the fluorescent phosphors wouldn't stop firing. So the lamp would stay on, whereas the LEDs will go from 0 to 100 60 times a second. So they're literally blinking. We've talked about it a lot on the show. Have you guys got into any, a lot of the lamp manufacturers are new to this now. Have you guys got into any of that at all?
I can't answer that because I don't know.
Right. His point was that all LED lamps should be IEEE 1789 standard certified so that they don't flicker. It's a big problem in the business. Even the lamps in here actually are flickering off and on 60 times a second. You could see it in the window on the video. That's why we put that up there. We have, it's an industry issue. It's one of those, again, those dark curtains, like the warranties. A lot of people are looking at it going, holy mackerel. There's Greg, how many of those bypass LED tubes do you have out in the market in Minneapolis?
Hundreds of thousands.
Yeah. I mean, hundreds of thousands of these tubes.
Yeah. I'm not really up to date on that.
Yeah.
My impression was that these would be very high frequency, just like when we went T8 lamps and electronic ballast.
It's a bypass issue. So if you bypass the ballast, then the driver the driver on it is a constant voltage driver, Greg. Is that the right term? Constant voltage?
I think so.
So then it's AC 60 hertz. And we'll show, there's videos that you'll see. The lights are literally flicking off.
I do notice that when it's an AC board, not without a driver, so the driver's into the circuitry on the board, you will see, if you sort of hold your iPhone up to take a picture, you'll see these dark lines.
Yep, that's the flicker.
Whether that's good or bad, I have no idea.
No, that's the same flicker that was causing problems back in the late 90s and back with T12s. It's exactly the same problem.
Okay.
And, basically, his point was that people have a right to good lighting. That was what he was saying.
I totally agree.
You know, and the industry, we've tried to discuss this many times on the show. We actually have a show that we can't put out because of it. it's one of those things in the business where people are like, oh my goodness, I can't believe that's happening again, right? So, we bring it up with people because I don't know. Once we heard about it, we were shocked.
I think while LEDs brought good in terms of innovation and design, it's also brought very bad. I mean, these thin down lights, I don't know if they're popular in the US, but they're extremely popular in Canada. Little 4-inch or 6-inch with the spring clips and a floating.
I got them sitting out there on the desk.
Well, I wrote this article and I posted it on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Talking about, I think the title was, is LED really a good thing or not? Or I don't remember exactly the title, but it's a disaster. People have gone, I mean, people went from MR16. I mean, we would sell, you know, ESX, which I think was 15 degree,
sure, yep.
And ENL, which was 23 degree, and EXT, EXZ, which was 25 degrees, and
EXN.
I don't remember, yeah. EXN and FNV. Yeah. I mean, people were like choosing the output of the light source,
sure.
Okay?
Sure.
And then you had a whole choice of trims, from baffle to gimbal to square to round to, and now everybody's going for a 4-inch flat.
A BR30.
Panel. Basically, no, it's like a little panel. It's worse.
It's like a
BR30.
It looks like a BR30.
Basically,
yeah.
It's like a flat, like a 2x2 panel, except sure. It's 4-inch round.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what everybody's going to.
I sell.
And it's a disaster.
I sell. You know how many requests we get for that?
We sell way too many. And it's a glare bomb. And there's no aesthetics to the whole thing. So. Sure. I think as an industry, you know, we owe it to sell our customers good stuff. There's so much good stuff out there.
Sure.
And the way everyone's, and so listen, I think contractors, I think there's good contractors and there's also contractors that don't care. And
I would say 90% of electrical contractors, maybe 98, have no idea about lighting whatsoever.
Well,
you
know,
no idea.
I think to throw our hands up in the air and say, well, that's the way it is and that's the way it's going to be, I don't think it's the right approach. I think there has to be an effort made to educate. Listen,
I think we should start a podcast.
Mm-hmm. You know what? They used to maybe get $50 to install a recessed
sure.
light. They're not getting it anymore because these thin down lights take almost no time to install.
Sure.
Right?
Nothing.
So how long does it take before one contractor decides to lower their labor cost to be competitive
sure.
and win the business? And before, you know, so that whole benefit they were getting on the labor side from a financial standpoint is going away.
Sure.
So now it's just the guy doing the installation loves it because it's so easy to do.
Sure.
You know? And it's fast and everything.
And it goes.
Yeah. So, but anybody who's in this business for the long term, including contractors, you know, need to be much more open-minded and progressive and thoughtful about what they're doing. So,
and I think that's the key is that, and touching on what you said is that we're learning a lot, and I think we're in that phase still where people are learning and they're making mistakes. And what do you do when you make a mistake? You learn from it. So we're kind of in that time frame yeah. right now where people are making mistakes. And the, you know, a contractor is going to buy the cheapest product. 2 years from now, they still want to be in business. They're going to find out, oh, I made a mistake. Now I got to do the right thing. And then they're going to go back and do the right thing. So we're kind of in that in between phase where I think it'll go back to qualities of lighting is going to matter again.
I hope
so. We just got to be here the long term, people, and get it done right.
Well, let me change sure. gear. Let me change gears one more time. So we've done, I don't know, two or three podcasts where. Smart lighting, Li-Fi, IoT, all this sort of stuff has come out. And it's taken me 22, 23 podcasts to come around to the point where I'm sitting back saying, you know what? I actually think this is going to be a thing. Because you look at the incumbent systems. So, for example, one of them that came up was parking lot management systems, mm-hmm. where the lighting is separated from the parking space management, right? And then you look at different systems to measure occupancy in train stations or malls or where people are congregating. And this whole IoT Li-Fi, it's like, why have a redundant system, two separate systems, when you can embed all this into lighting? And then you went in Frankfurt, you wouldn't have even known that Signify's booth was a lighting booth because basically, or LEDVANCE, because the whole thing was about IoT. And control and measurement and information gathering from lighting. Where do you think that business is going, Mr. Nathaniel?
I think it's going to continue to progress, and I think it's going to continue to be implemented more and more, especially, mm-hmm. I'd say, especially at the, you know, at the government level, where maybe money is not or cost is not as important, so a hospital or a, you know, a courthouse or whatever it happens to
sure.
be. I think private, you know, private companies We'll do it. But I think it's going to, I think over time it's going to get more and more implemented and integrated into the market. From where I sit as a business person, the question is it going to be a closed system or an open system? Are the guys that have the IoT and the Li-Fi and all of that and the software behind, are they going to try to lock up the hardware because they own the software? Or are they going to be happy to sell the software and let the hardware guys build to their platform? So if it's a PoE or low voltage DC or whatever it happens to be. So my gut feeling is that the market won't let it become a closed system. Nobody's going to want to be locked up. So I think that...
So you think it's going to be like an Android sort of
as
situation?
As a hardware manufacturer, sure. If I call lighting fixtures hardware, I think we will adapt as we see the demand for PoE. I mean, we're not... Listen, my philosophy, I don't need to be a first mover on this IoT or PoE. I kind of watch and see how it's progressing. And then when I feel it's starting to become more substantial, then I get going and start developing product for it. So I'm that's my mindset, is when it's prime time, we'll be there to play. That's how I see it.
We haven't decided whether it's a, what would you say, Greg, a niche or a niche? What do you say down there in Minneapolis? Niche?
I say niche, but yeah.
I wonder if it's a niche market or not. The only thing that sort of, I'm a bit of a, maybe I'm going wild with this here, David, but I think Li-Fi is extremely interesting to me. I think there's something about walking through the, like if you think about if we had all Wi-Fi enabled fixtures, you're walking through the internet, man.
Sure.
Those are zeros and ones coming at you, right?
Absolutely.
And I wonder if you can program it so you don't actually have to choose to interact with it or have a, that the actual internet signal looking at you is bio, can see your face, knows who you are. I think this is the long-term thing. I think that once you walk into a mall, they will know, they will recognize that's David Nathaniel right there. And there's his four children and his wife. I think that's where this is going. I really see Li-Fi as a massive disrupting technology that when really smart engineers get their hands on it, why would you need to interact with it at all? If the internet is literally what people are walking through, we just measure the zeros and ones being disrupted in the light. And then those zeros and ones can interact with some other software in the cloud or on the edge or whatever it is and know who's there, what their net worth is, what they bought last week. You know, I think it's going there. That's what I think the end game is.
I don't think that's specifically, Li-Fi.
Maybe it's not just Li-Fi.
That's again, software with cameras and, whatever sensors and whatnot that can do that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't personally like that. I mean,
I don't like it either.
I don't like my privacy being,
I believe in secrecy. I believe in secrecy. I'm above privacy.
Yeah, so.
I believe in secrecy. I think.
So I don't like this sort of big brother watching you. But in any case, I do see the hardware having these accessories available. So if you need a Li-Fi, whatever, I don't know what
whatever
word is,
Bluetooth
transmitter
mesh,
or
Bluetooth,
whatever,
Bluetooth mesh,
or
a
carbon monoxide sensor, or a Bluetooth speaker on it, or whatever. I can see fixtures, having these accessories as options integrated into them. So
you're just in the observation mode of this right now, though.
Yeah, I'm. It's so far away from what I'm doing.
Sure.
So if Li-Fi is a big thing, well, to me, Li-Fi is a competitor to Wi-Fi. Sure. I'm not in the Wi-Fi business. So really, what am I supposed to do with it?
But maybe you can compete with it. I don't know.
I don't know. It's a far stretch.
It's a tough one.
I don't know.
I think that's a good place to call it a podcast. What do you think, Greg?
Yep. Works for me.
All right. Thank you for coming on the show, David.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Greg. Enjoy the time with you guys.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well.
For sure. Okay.
Thanks for coming.
All right.
Thank you.
Oh, Keystone Technologies. Visit KeystoneTech.com, KeystoneTech.com, man. KeystoneTech.com. Scotty, throw the website up there for the YouTube listeners, watchers. Listen, sometimes you want a future fit rather than retrofit. That's right. Keystone's innovative future fit LED kits are the ideal solution to convert legacy fixtures into energy efficient LED systems. Man, sometimes you get that circular, that rectangular, that sconce, and you put the LED bulb in there, it just doesn't look the way it should. Well, in that case, you get the future fit going. They got the wall sconce, they got the rectangle, they got the linear, they got the circular, they got the modules and kits for 2x2s and 2x4s. Come on, man. Future fit. Future fit. What are you thinking? That's right. When you can't get it right with the LED tubes and the LED CFLs, which I love. You guys know I talk about them. But sometimes you got to go future fit. Keystone's got them. KeystoneTech.com, man. That's KeystoneTech.com. Come on, man. 50,000 hours, 5-year warranty, beautiful illumination in the fixture. Come on, man. You know how Keystone rolls. They don't mess around, man. When they make stuff, they make it right. Award-winning customer service. Go to KeystoneTech.com. And don't forget, man, the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Why are you guys so afraid to be educated out there? Come on, man. LS1, if you're new in the game, LS1 is the best starting point. I put all my people through it. LS1 is the best starting point to the lighting business. If you're out there and you're swinging light bulbs around, LED or otherwise, you need LS1. If you want to get into projects and get on the way to get your LC, guess what? Nail built the best course after LS1 called LS2. So get down at nail.org, N-A-I-L-D.org, for information on joining this association or information on educational products, or just to hang out for a bit, man. Come on, go to websites. It's fun. And thank you to David Nathaniel, the CEO of Standard. Hey, David, thanks for coming on the show, man. Always a pleasure meeting with you, and even more pleasure recording a podcast with you, man. That was fantastic. A lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. And it was great to hear about Standard, that Standard is thriving. And you know, it's always good to hear from the companies that are thriving in this tumultuous lighting environment. Oh, it's up and down. Where are we going to go next with this thing? Find out. Stay tuned to Get a Grip on Lighting. It's where you're going to know what the heck is going on. Come on, baby. Get a Grip. Episode 25.